The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Off we go into a new week. Thanks for being with us. Our chairman of the board is Jared Nielsen. If anything goes wrong, it is completely, 100%, totally his fault. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business through the years. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate their support. I'm just going to take a moment here to say that before we get into the sports stuff, 14 years today, 14 years ago today, we launched this. It was known then as Pros 2 Preps, P-R-O-S, the number 2 Preps. And then we pivoted over to Sports 360 AZ, but 14 years, and Jared and I were talking off the air, he's been doing this for 13 years. I sent Erica a text this morning, 14 years for him. Jordy's right around 12, I think. So it's fun. We do this, and we do it well. And we have television shows this week on Arizona Family Sports, on Cox Yearview. We have a high school game of the week that our talent is a part of over on CW7 as we continue to march forward on this unfiltered. Nobody's going to come down the hall and say, I just got a phone call from, and I've had that happen before. Or you run into the president of a team and they walk right by you and you're just like, hey, have a nice day. And they just keep walking. It's completely unprofessional, completely juvenile minor league. So I'm glad I don't have to deal with that stuff. But I'll still say, have a great day. And they'll still be juvenile and minor and act like a petulant little child. But I digress. So my Cardinals are 2-0. 2-0. Can you believe it? And then your Cardinals, the way they played at the end of the game yesterday was like, that was so sloppy. So sloppy. And Jonathan Gannon fell on the sword again. Jonathan Gannon likes to do that. It's on me. It's my responsibility. It's my fault. It's great to do that when you're 2-0. Yeah, I could look at it and say they very easily could be 0-2. And the response will be, yeah, this is the NFL and every game is difficult and all that stuff. And the bottom line is, guess what? Kyler Murray threw a pick. Shocking, stunning. It wasn't a good one. And then all these penalties that were rolling up towards the end of the game. So yeah, today feels like a liver and onions day. Like, yeah, it's a win, but you know, yeah, it's a meal, but actually like liver and onions. Jody Jackson will be with us to break it down. She was there at the game yesterday. I watched it back on tape because I was busy watching the Cowboys and Giants, and I was busy watching the Eagles and the Chiefs. Those games were on Fox. Those games were back-to-back. And I was watching the Diamondbacks because they were trying to stay alive. And Jody and I will get into that as well. They are alive. The college football, once again, I just love college. I love how there's the energy and the enthusiasm of Tennessee against Georgia. I love how there's the energy and enthusiasm of a game like, I don't know, Arizona State, Texas State. Or Friday night. The Battle of the Wildcats in Tucson. The Wildcats of U of A are 3-0. What I like about U of A being 3-0 is a bunch of things. It makes the Arizona State fans uneasy. If I walk in, because I don't care. I didn't go to either school. I don't care. I want both teams to be 11-0 or 10-0 and meet each other. I want that. It never happens in this state. We're just excited when they're 4-6 and 6-4 and which coach is going to get fired. And we need to be better at that. Just do. And so I want U of A to keep winning. U of A at Iowa State. Both teams are going to be on a bye. John Wilner and I will chop it up on U of A. They're 3-0. And ASU, what he saw of them the other night and where they're heading. I must say on the Arizona State broadcast that the move of going away from the dreadful Pac-12 network. When I watch True TV on Saturday night, I never watch True TV unless it's during March Madness, they put some games over there. They did a half hour inside look at ASU. They're going to do it around all the Big 12 teams. They sent a production crew out here of 6 from Boston. They got here in the middle of the week. And they did some things that we see often. They went to an at-home with a player. That's fine. But it was well shot. It was well done. It was interesting. And it was a whole half hour on ASU. And it wasn't rah, rah, go Sun Devils. It was just basically, yeah, Hines Ward was on display talking about how he's impacted Jordan Tice and why Hines Ward is here. Story's done a lot, but it's never really done in a national space. It isn't. And so I found the coverage to be terrific, to be very much high end. This was not ESPN Plus. This was not ESPN where the announcers are calling the Arizona State Wildcats are coming up next, or there's a logo of ASU for a U of A game. We have seen all that through the years because they don't care. They don't. And when I see high-end work, I like to acknowledge it. It's high-end. It's very good to take in. UCLA firing Deshaun Foster. So this impacts Arizona and Arizona State in a very interesting sort of way. And John and I are going to, Wilner and I are going to get into this. So there's a few things. A player that is on UCLA or Virginia Tech's rosters today. Virginia Tech fired their coach over the weekend. UCLA fired their coach over the weekend. Three games in. Gone. Get them out of here. The players today, follow me on this, can now enter the transfer portal today. Classes haven't even started yet at UCLA. And because they've fired these coaches three games in, the players get a redshirt year wherever they go. Four games is what it takes. Now, eventually, I'm going to ask John about this. There will be a player that will get a big lawyer, and Daddy Baller will say, we're going to sue because we want to be immediately eligible. That's not happening today that I know of. And if anybody's, oh, that's outrageous, that'll never happen. You haven't been paying attention to what's going on in college sports and the NCAA just disintegrating. I digress. But it was a fun Saturday. The Cowboys-Giants game yesterday was amazing. Saturday, all day long, there were lightning delays, storm delays. I'm watching Miami and South Florida over on CW, wanting to see a terrific back and forth. It gets delayed by lightning. Oregon goes in and does what they were supposed to do at Northwestern. There were just moments in game USC-Purdue that I just enjoyed Saturday. I was doing a lot of this on Saturday. It was fun. But I found myself most of the day focusing on the baseball team. The hometown nine was playing at Minnesota. The Twins are awful. If I had said to you on May 15th, hey, by the way, the Diamondbacks have a problem with their bullpen. This is really frustrating. And I bring it up in June 15th, July 15th, August 15th, September 15th. And yet they're two games back of the final wild card spot because the Mets are, instead of the Mets having a glove and a ball, they've got both hands around there. Both hands around their neck. So here they are. The hometown nine has very big games this week, meaningful games. Every pitch, people are going to be leaning in. That is what we want. This is what makes baseball so great. It's not just 3 hours on a Sunday afternoon. No, this is the grind. This is overcoming adversity. You still want Torrey fired after this? They're still in the race. They've still kept the team together. Geraldo Perdomo is having an amazing year. So, for baseball fans that have to go through the grind, it's all worth it. This is great. I love all this. And that's about it. That's on my mind. Whoa, Bones McKay is going to be with us later in the week. Bones and I, of course, Bones was Phil Mickelson's caddy for years and years and years, and then Justin Thomas's. And the Ryder Cups next week. And we do talk golf here. We will have Bones with us later in the week. Jim and I are going to actually host an event with Ability 360 in November. We'll have more information on that. It's an event that you can come to. And that's going to be this week. All right. Next is Jody Jackson. The one and only Jody Jackson. That is next. I'm Brad Sussmat. Now it's Jody Jackson, brought to you by Rockin' Protein. We appreciate Rockin' Protein every week with Jody Jackson. She drops knowledge around the valley, around the state, whatever it is she's doing, because Jody's on the go a lot. The Cardinals are 2-0, and it feels like they're, I don't know, not 0-2, but it doesn't feel like a very good 2-0. It's like liver and onions 2-0. What do you make out of 2-0 Arizona Cardinals outside of that they're 2-0?
Well, I mean, week one, and I guess it's all in hindsight, you say, well, it was on the road, it was figuring some things out. They have some new, they have, new O-line coach. They, lost a special teams guy mid-game, and then you come to this game and it's 27-3. It's everything you want in a home
Yes.
opener. And I think a lot of things happen. I think the thing that I have reflected on, Brad, from yesterday's post game on the radio network to today is I think I did not really and some things I did hammer home. The Kyler interception that could have put another field goal on the board and really, I don't want to say ended the madness, but made it more difficult. That was inexcusable. The onside kick not being, executed better from the Cardinals' standpoint of defending it or falling on the ball, that's a tough one. But I think the other thing on the side of maybe defending a few things for the Cardinals defense, when you lose Max Melton early, Garrett Williams late, and granted it, and then Will Johnson late, I think it did throw everything into a little bit of a, you're up 27-3, so you do go with a defense that's less aggressive. And then, when you bring out all out pressure like they did in the final drive for Carolina, and it worked. I just think on the back end, when you're a little more unsure without Melton back there, I think it affected things a little more than I realized in the moment yesterday. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that if you made a couple more plays, everyone in the Valley would be like, okay, it was a really good game. But, the Kyler pick, the defense not, allowing a 4th and 16, the defense just allowing Bryce Young to kind of flow down the field with short passes, made it difficult. And so, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you are 2-0, and it's the old adage of, hey, it's better to correct the mistakes when you've got a win in the building. We feel good in the building. We're 2-0, and as we go about our work this week for San Francisco, at least we are 2-0.
One other note, I think, on the game on Sunday and the win over Carolina. I think it's really cool that people like you and I can say we saw Calais Campbell when he was just a dumpy rookie. And we can turn around and say, look at Calais Campbell now making an enormous play at the end of the game. He's probably one of the most affable athletes I've ever been around and covered, Jody.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and those years were special when he and Darnell Dockett were in the middle there, and he was always just, I guess you could say that I'm a little biased because he went to Miami, but
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
he was always a favorite of mine, but you're right. He's a favorite of everybody because he's so friendly and he's so real. And even now when he enters the press conference room during the week at the Cardinals facility, he's very, he's pretty unfiltered. I'm sure he's not telling us everything, but his raw commentary, what he thinks is very real. He's not afraid to say it. That's why I love, I don't know about you, but covering the older athletes, Eric Chavez when he was with the D-backs and he's 35 years old, and you really get the real deal when you talk to these guys because they're just like they're not worried about what they're saying. And not that he's saying anything crazy, but I saw that last play was great, right? He just takes down Taylor Moton was there in his way, and he got to the quarterback. And I'm like thinking, hey, at 39, he's still got a pretty good bull rush. So it's impressive to watch. And I know he said he was a little tired at times in the Saints game. And the fact that he was good to go at the end of that game tells you a lot. He's one of the reasons why if you think this season could be special for the Cardinals, going to the playoffs or whatever you want to call it, I think that would be special for a lot of fans. I think everyone wants that. How far they go, who knows? But I think you would have to point to Calais Campbell. Like, I can see us looking back if that happens in January and saying it was, a lot was attributed to this guy being here.
The idea of the Diamondbacks still in the race. You're going to be there for this series, right? It's you in.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing the next really the bulk of the games this week. Yeah, it's a huge week. So
What
come
the?
on out, fans.
Yeah, I know. Did neither one of us saw this coming, did we? And you're there on the ground. I'm not. You're there on the ground. Did
I
you
never
see
rule
this
anything.
coming?
I'll be honest, Brad, I never rule it out. I mean, did I see the Mets losing this many games? Like the Mets having their free fall, and I know they finally won a game over the weekend, but that really enabled a lot of hope for the Giants, for the Reds, and for the Diamondbacks, because now they've put some distance between the Cardinals have fallen out, and the fact that you play the Giants head to head for 3 games again, now you had the three, there. which didn't go as well as I think we all hoped it would, but it went okay. In that, you come back home and you've got the Giants, Phillies, and the Dodgers. And then after that, there are only three games left. So
In San
everything's on the
Diego.
line here. Yeah.
Do you think it's going to come down to the final three in San Diego?
I think it could. Yeah. I mean, and it could
I
be
think
like
it
a
will.
three-way
Yeah.
situation. I could see it being, or really even four ways. That's the beauty of baseball. It comes down to, the very last game many, many times, or even last year, it came down to one more day. So, which is, was horrible. But yeah, I think it could.
I'll let you go off that. Appreciate your time and insights as always. Stay busy. Stay out of trouble. You're too busy to get in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. And congratulations on 14 years of Sports 360 AZ, Brad. You do amazing work, and I know many in the Valley, all the fans appreciate your coverage and your team's coverage.
Well, thanks, Jody. We're back with more after this time out. And now on this Monday, John Wilner, nice enough to join us as always. Wilner, hotline, nationally syndicated columnist on the college sports, particularly football scene this time of year. Okay, partner, there's a lot here to dive into.
Oh, yes, there
There
is.
is. So this, we're going to get in the weeds today. I'm just telling and people like it when you and I get in the weeds. So let's get in the weeds on UCLA fires their coach. Not a surprise. When I saw the score about the second quarter, I was texting my Bruins fans and they were just done.
Yep.
But today, the transfer portal is open for athletes at Virginia Tech and UCLA.
Yes.
Explain that. Here we are in September
Yeah, right.
and
Well,
classes haven't even started yet at UCLA, but they can
right.
leave.
Which is an interesting little twist, but the rule is that if your head coach leaves, the portal opens for 30 days and you can get picked apart. Your rosters can get picked apart. Usually, if for in-season firings, it's complicated because of the academic piece, right? And you don't want to leave in the middle of a semester, whatever. But with UCLA's status as a quarter system school, it's a little different, and we'll see if they get hit hard here in the next, I guess, week. I think they start class next Monday. I'm not positive that. It's one of the two Mondays. So we'll see. Here's the thing. It's not like that roster is oozing players that Ohio State and Oregon and so on are going to want, especially for this current season, as if you're a semester school. Now, Oregon, another quarter school, but that is a fact of life for schools that fire their coach in season, is the portal opens immediately, and that's the rule.
Okay, will there ever be a day, John, that a player will be sitting in that situation? Let's just take a quarterback at UCLA who was at Tennessee, and the coach gets blown out, and the people around him are going to say, "We're going to sue because we could be eligible immediately rather than having to sit a year." Do you think that day will ever come? Three
Yeah, I
games
mean,
in,
I think,
three games in, John. There's some teams that know they don't have a quarterback, and suddenly
yeah.
there's one in the portal. Maybe.
I would not be surprised if a certain quarterback from UCLA is in the portal.
Yeah, right.
It could. I mean, I don't think that lawsuit will get settled in time for Nico to get to be eligible this year. But yes, I mean, any rule on the books basically is subject to a lawsuit at this point with the NCAA, unless they can get some kind of legislation codified by Congress, which they are pushing for desperately. But everything is fair game for the attorneys. There is no doubt. And that's the kind of the Iamaleva family is the kind of family that would push for something like that. I mean, you can't write a worse script for that family, can you?
No,
It leaves
no.
Tennessee, takes less money, worse coaching, worse team, just awful, awful decision. And
And Tennessee is in overtime with Georgia.
Tennessee's an overtime with Georgia. And
And
Joey
who's
Aguilar,
watching?
the former UCLA quarterback, Joey Aguilar, who left when Nico came in, is now at
Yes.
Tennessee
Yes.
and playing well and playing for a
Yes.
better team. The Bard would get a kick out of this one.
It is bananas. So there are people wondering, how did UCLA fall so fast? And this is going to tie into USC play Michigan State at 11 p.m. Eastern time this coming weekend. The whole, do you regret going into the Big Ten movement? is got to be talked about now. So
Yeah,
going to
yeah.
UCLA, going to UCLA, a couple of years into this, how much buyer's remorse is there?
Well, I think that there's a few folks that have buyer's remorse, but I think the administration does not, and most of the fans do not, and they just look down, are going to continue to look down upon the Pac-12, partly because they're viewing the Pac-12 as what it's becoming and not what it was. Look, they were always the mo to me, the most interesting test case in this whole realignment for any of the conferences, any of the schools. UCLA was most interesting because of the deeply intense dynamics holding them back. Not just like what Bill Walton, the way the late Bill Walton would eloquently say, that they're, it's a program of the West, that should
Conference of
not have to go to the
Champions.
Midwest for money and all that. But just the Olympic sports, the financial piece, everything that's going to go into the totality of UCLA's existence in the Big Ten has been up for question the whole time. Now, if you're UCLA, you could say, well, USC was going to go, we would have looked stupid for not going. That maybe, maybe not. But you have the only way to see that thing clearly is to envision what the Pac-12 would be currently with UCLA in it, not what you think the pack of the Pac-12 in past years or what it's going to become. And I think there's a good case to make that they should have stayed. I've always thought that. And financially, it's not nearly the boon that they thought it was going to be. And partly part of that's because of the calimony, the $10 million they got to pay Cal every year.
The calimony, I like that. I've heard ASU and U of A have both tried to get UCLA on their schedule in the last year because
Yes.
they knew that UCLA was doing a downward spiral and they can go in the backyard and recruit. Are you hearing the same thing on that?
Oh yeah, I mean, Gramercini told me that they would love to play UCLA. Absolutely, it makes so much sense, right? There's so many Southern Californians in Arizona, and there's just so many ties, university ties, and I don't mean athletic department, university ties with Arizona and ASU to Southern California. I mean, ASU's got a campus in LA, right? They got a satellite campus there. It makes tons of sense. The recruiting, all of it. Hopefully they'll be able to work it out. But the scheduling is complicated because of the number of power conference opponents you're going to have to play. If there's an SEC Big Ten crossover series, I don't see how the Bruins will have room for ASU or Arizona. So a lot of that is yet to play out. But I mean, it makes tons of sense. I mean, thank goodness Arizona and UCLA are playing basketball every year.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's right. One other question about UCLA, and we'll move off the topic, and that is who makes sense for a hire? If you don't have a direct name, but if you're designing somebody for that job because it's at the bottom of the bottom, it doesn't have great resources, you play in a half-empty Rose Bowl, you're in a major sports town, like that's a hard putt, but
It
something
is,
out there
yeah.
is going to take it.
Well, and they also have, their admission standards are higher than a lot of the schools they're competing against for recruits, and always have been. That's been a little bit of a problem there. Yeah, it's tough. I assume they're going to wait and see how the season plays out and see which are the hot coaches, hot coordinators. But I tweeted this the other night. Has there ever been a case where you fired a coach on the field after a game? And you've walked across to the other sidelines and offered that coach a contract because Jason Heck at New Mexico probably should be on their short list. The guy did a phenomenal job at Idaho in 2 years. Obviously, I mean, New Mexico played Michigan tough in Ann Arbor a couple weeks ago. He is, I would go as far as saying he is potentially what Kalen DeBoer was before Washington hired him. DeBoer had won at multiple levels and was winning at Fresno State. Eck, potentially winning at multiple levels in the Mountain West. He's not a dynamic personality. He doesn't necessarily look the part. He's a bit frumpy, but the guy can coach his butt off. And that's what UCLA needs. They cannot get caught up. They've already announced, and I'm rambling here, but
I love it.
this thing just. I don't understand how these schools are so dumb, right? They've already
There you
announced
go.
they're going to form this committee of UCLA, alums in the sports and entertainment business. That is so ridiculous. That is a recipe for getting the wrong guy. They have a huge portfolio of former Bruins who are in the NFL and college football, who know the sport, who know coaching, and could advise them on who really to hire. I tweeted this already this morning. They had a brain 20 years ago. UCLA was looking for a coach, and convened a brain trust of their former people with ties to UCLA, former coaches, and asked those guys, who should we hire? You know who they said they should hire? John Harbaugh. They didn't hire John Harbaugh. The administration went in a different direction. I've heard he can coach.
Yeah, he's not half bad. I love it when you just get on a rant like
Well,
that.
and
I just
so
kind
here
of
they
sit back
are.
and do this.
Here they
So.
are. They're hired. Who knows exactly what role Martin Jarman, the current AD who hired Foster, is going to play? And they've got an executive assistant on the committee who oversees football. They got to just lean on their football people. They got a lot of former Bruins who are football people, and just dispense with the business and entertainment execs. It is so stupid. These schools never learn. They never learn.
Okay. I got a couple of things to get into here with you. I got to keep my composure. Okay, quickly, Michigan State fans really not happy, and I don't say I blame them.
Yeah,
11 p.m.
I
kickoff
know.
on the West Coast for USC at 8. And
Yep.
people in the West Coast are saying we have to stay up till 8 o'clock. Well, try being a Spartan fan this Saturday. Is this
Yep.
going to be the norm, John?
I don't know if it's the norm. So there's two pieces to it. One of the piece is Fox putting a game on the broadcast network at 8 o'clock Pacific, right? Starting a game on a West Coast campus at 8 o'clock Pacific, which they have done a handful of times in the past. It's usually USC. They played Stanford. They played Fresno State 8 o'clock Pacific in the Coliseum. Now, what's new is that it's an Eastern time zone team coming across, starting at 11 o'clock local. I think Michigan State did this at ASU in the early in the Herm Edwards era. I
Yeah,
believe
they
they
did
had
come
to
out
do
here. It
that.
was a
Yep.
miserable night.
Yes. So
Miserable.
I think that Fox is going to explore doing this a little bit more. Now, the reason it's happening, so the quick recap is for this Saturday, the first pick in the Big 10 draft, CBS, they picked Michigan at Northwestern for the 12:30 game. NBC had the second pick. They took Illinois, Indiana for the 4:30 game, which is a ranked versus ranked game. So Fox doesn't have a Big Ten game for the noon, big noon window. They're using Utah, Texas Tech. But Fox has got to put a Big Ten game on. So the only option is to wait for the NBC 4:30 game to end and put a game on at 8 o'clock Pacific. And so the USC Texas Tech was USC Michigan State was the one that was available. That's how it all came to play. And it's because the West Coast teams can't play in big noon at home, right? You can't start at 9 a.m. in LA or Seattle or Eugene. So this is the way to offset that. It's a long explanation. But yes, I think that Fox is going to have more games starting, Big Ten games starting on West Coast campuses at 8 o'clock. And it's a good window for them. The ratings have done well in the
Yeah,
past.
no, I get it. I get it. Arizona State is on Big Fox this week against Baylor.
Yes.
What do you make out of the matchup, John? Arizona State at Baylor this Saturday.
First, a little context. I was impressed with how ASU responded on Saturday night. Gut punch loss at Mississippi State, coming back. Texas State, I think it probably helped ASU that they had a close game with Texas State last year. But I was impressed with their energy level from the start. They took care of business. It wasn't a taxing finish. So they should be pretty fresh for this trip to Waco. I haven't checked the weather conditions, and I don't mean the heat. I know the heat is not an issue for ASU, but Oregon State went Texas Tech and had a 2.5, 3 hour rain delay. So I don't know if thunderstorms could play a role because that can change the dynamics for a
Sure.
team if you got to sit around for hours. It's interesting. ASU had the same game last year, really. They They won at Texas Tech, and their week four game was at, I mean, sorry, they won at Texas State, and their week four game was at Lubbock. And now they've beaten Texas State, and their week four game is in Waco. Last year they lost in Lubbock. Remember, they were down two touchdowns for a lot of that game. Didn't really compete to the end in terms of the score. We'll see. It's a good benchmark for them this year. I think it's going to be a tough game. Baylor won at SMU and is capable, if they're playing right, they are capable of beating ASU. I think Sam Keller is needs to play well, but they've got to run the ball. They have to run the ball like they did in the second half against Mississippi State. If they don't, then I think they're going to be vulnerable to a significant loss.
And before I get you out of here, this is not a good week for a bye week in Tucson, is it?
I don't know. I you'd
3-0,
think
John.
they're 3-0, they got a lot of momentum. I almost think it is because they are in such good position, and that was such a big win for them, that this gives them a chance to recalibrate, get, back on an even keel. And the other thing too, Brad, is they got a lot of things they got to fix. I mean, they got to fix right tackle. They got to fix the, the holding and the false starts on the offensive line. Special teams need to get cleaned up. I think they need to be a little more committed to the running game than they even were. I mean, they kind of let that game get away, partly because they got away from the ground game. They got things they got to clean up. So 2 weeks to prepare for going to Ames, and that's possibly the best team in the Big 12 and certainly one of the best coach teams. Iowa State will exploit any vulnerability. So to me, Arizona has 2 weeks to clean up their mess, and they've got there's no big messes, but they got some messes that could cost them a game down the road that they need to clean up.
John Wilner and I could go another hour because I
Well, we
need
could go. Yes,
it.
we could.
Yeah, we could, but we're not going to.
Yes, we could.
Less is more, they say. Appreciate you.
Okay.
Appreciate your time as always. Have a good week.
Thanks a lot, Brad.
And we're back with more after this timeout.